Hi, this is episode 44 of SIW Radio, the podcast series from SecurityInfoWatch.com. Today is Thursday, October 29th, and this is our ISC East 2009 podcast. I did a day trip up to New York yesterday to attend this show. This is ISC East has become a regional show. The show promoter is very honest about that. It's a very good regional show. You've got a lot going on the show floor. You've got everything from some great training from the PSA partnership that they've done. You've got Jim Gompers doing a program before the show on IP training. We've got the public safety pavilion where you can find things like police cameras and setups like that. And of course, there's a lot more. There's also there was a section on the show floor from Shenzhen, China, where you can find all sorts of low-priced and not always the most high-tech equipment, but decent equipment. So this is going to be our show report, and the highlight of today's program is going to be an interview we'll feature in a little bit from Steve Whalen, who is heading up GVI, Samsung GVI Security. And they have recently announced that they are going to take the company private, so we're going to ask him about what they're doing there. But let me just run through quickly some of the things we checked out at the show floor yesterday. One of the folks I met with was Kevin Shabazi, the CEO of Avocado Security. This is an interesting company. They're on the online, avocadosecurity.com, avocado just like the fruit. Or vegetable. I guess it's a fruit. And what they're doing is a video management system that VMS is just part of the equation. The main part of the equation, what they've kind of earned their name on, is business intelligence. Being able to take data from sensors, but mainly from video, and turn it into charts and management tools for your security department. Pretty cool if you're needing that sort of thing. If metrics is a big part of your security job or what you're going to provide to your customers, they probably wanted to check out. All right, so let me hit some other ones that things that I saw around the show. Caught up with Matt Gibson. He's a commish of police up there in Buffalo, New York. Matt was doing a presentation that morning. Steve Lasky, editor in chief of Security Technology Executive Magazine, and I caught a bit of this presentation. They have done something pretty interesting with city surveillance cameras. He was there to talk about that. It was, if I recall, a project that they had worked with Johnson Controls on. It's interesting in the after discussion. We're standing there with Max saying hello, and a detective from the New York Metropolitan Police Department comes in. He's there, based in Manhattan, so he's right there, at the show. And he's discussing with Matt Gibson, the commish up there in Buffalo, about how you get buy-in from the people. Of course, Manhattan's a much more liberal, perhaps, place than Buffalo. It was his perception, and that when they've tried to do city surveillance projects in the past, that they have had to fight against of that public perception of Big Brother. Well, that's going to be an interesting issue to overcome. Max's perception was that once you do it, people recognize that that municipal surveillance is a benefit for them. All right, so let me hit some other things that that we were able to cover at the show yesterday. While over at Canon's booth, was able to check out a new vandal-resistant mini-dome camera. This is an indoor mini-dome camera. One of the things that that Canon has done with this is they've mounted the optics board on four springs. So your typical mini dome, you've got a plastic dome that the optics look through. Then you've got the board, and then you've got the mount. Well, this is if you hit this thing with a baseball bat or whatever, or a sledgehammer, it's designed to withstand a fair bit of that force by allowing the optics to retract into the camera mount on these four springs. So check that out. That is, we'll have some, you can of course go back to Canon. They announced that product back in September, I believe it was, and really now starting to show it. So definitely check that one out. Pretty cool idea in terms of how to deal with vandal resistance. All right, let's see. Bounced over to Infinova. This is where I caught up with Mark Wilson. He's their VP of marketing. They're showing some pretty neat stuff. Infinova, of course, does a lot of video systems, hybrid systems. Is one of the things they've really put their stake on the ground in. Most impressive at their booth, of course, is they've got a camera that's explosion-proof. This thing is cut out. It looks like out of stainless steel. It's probably a good quarter-plus inch thick everywhere you look at it. I would estimate it weighs probably about 100 pounds. I couldn't pick it up. I'm dealing with a broken wrist, and this thing is just massive. Anyway, it's for, you know, environments where you've got a very harsh environment. And one of the things that Mark and I were talking about, and it's perhaps a misconception in the industry, is that explosion-proof does not mean that, you know, you can, you know, a terrorist can throw an IED on this thing and it comes out shooting video the whole time with just a smudge on the lens from some dirt. No, what the explosion-proof camera means is that it's actually sealed so that if it's in a gaseous environment, say in a manufacturing facility, it would not be the cause of the explosion. So the idea is that it's not designed to withstand an explosion outside of it, though it's built like it would. It's actually designed to keep that from happening from the inside. So that's an interesting thing there. A little bit later, popped over to Winstead's booth. Of course, these are the folks that do control room consoles. And I caught up with Wayne Cook. He's their VP of sales over there at Winstead. We got a chance to look through some really amazing photos of some command center designs that they've done for everyone from some pretty high-end enterprise global businesses to some three-letter federal agencies that have used Winstead stuff for their command centers. Really neat. If you ever need some ideas on what to do with command center design, definitely take a flip through their catalog. I found it fairly interesting stuff. Right inside of the Winstead booth was Exact Technologies. Exact Technologies is getting a pretty good rep for its VMS. I caught up with Dave Underwood. He's the president there at Exact. And asked him, why are you getting this buzz that you've been getting lately? And, it was kind of interesting. One of the things that Dave said was that they're really focused on their licensing. How do they license their product and, you know, keep it affordable? The other thing is that Exact has quietly been keeping up with all the latest, products, feature sets, rather, in their product that, you hear about from some of the top-tier or top market share providers. So those would be things like, mapping and such, and LDAP, database support. Pretty interesting company. I think it's definitely, the product can definitely be high-end, but it's got a rep right now for being a fairly easy-to-use solution. And that was one of the other things that Dave said he was, they've really focused on is making the solution easy to use for their customers. And I get a sense that he's probably not just paying lip service to that. I mean, you could add as many features as you want, but in the end, if you don't make those features easy to use for your customers, you're not going to get the buy-in from the customer to use that. So, speaking of VMS companies, I ran into a new one, at least new to me, IP Vision Software. And I ran into Mark Kolar, who is the Executive Vice President of Strategic Alliances and Corporate Strategy. And Mark was over at the Hirsch Electronics booth. IP Vision is going to be working with Hirsch in an OEM capacity. Hirsch, of course, integrates with lots of video management systems, so its access control can tie in. But, so they're going to be working with IP Vision and OEM relationship. But here's the interesting thing about IP Vision. They're trying to take advantage of the smart camera concept. Obviously, a lot of today's new IP cameras can manage recording themselves, which is why they have things like SD cards in their cameras. They can handle the recording, tell what to record, and specify all that. You just set it up. So the typical VMS model would be to send data to a server that processes it and then handles the recording in there. Tells where to record, what to record, what frame rate, all that kind of thing. Well, this software, rather than be a midpoint, a man in the middle, it's you know, it's hard to describe what it does, but basically, from what Mark was telling me, this software that tells the camera to talk directly to a recorder somewhere, and so it's not a man in the middle. Now, if you need to do something, you need to change settings or go back and look at some archived video. Then it gets in the middle. But other than that, you're not having to run all that server power. So I thought that was a pretty interesting model there. For IP Vision software, you can go online to www.ipvisionsoftware.com and check them out. Yeah, good one to compare to. You know, I just mentioned Exact. Check out Exact, www.exact, that's EXACQ.com. All right, so what else was going on at the show yesterday? Let's see. JVC was held a press conference in the afternoon showing off some new products. And you know, it's interesting. The things that they were showing off were new analog cameras. But one of the things that that Jeff Anderson, who's their national marketing manager for the video surveillance products at JVC, touted was their IP vision, IP video products, really, you know, making them easier to set up, but also lower in power usage. Now, that's not something that we talk about a lot in this industry, but when he was breaking out some numbers, you should definitely reach out to JVC. They're jvc.com/pro to get to their professional products company, which is what the surveillance products falls under. In terms of overall power savings, when you're talking about one or two cameras, you could care less. It doesn't seem that significant. When you start talking about corporate campuses and even cities or enterprise global installations, and you start saving power on each product, you can be talking about pretty significant savings there. So, on the fire business side, I managed to check out Honeywell, of course, very dominant player in the fire business. I managed to chat with Beth Welch over there at Honeywell Fire Systems. Oh, this was what I thought was most interesting, and something that all our dealer integrators need to pay attention to. According to Beth, they are hearing that fire inspectors are paying more attention to projects than ever because they're less busy. The fact is that there's less construction projects than before, and there's less construction going on, so fire inspectors aren't bogged down and haven't scrambled to get to each, you know, site to do the inspections. So when they're there, they're actually paying more attention. So, I not particularly shocking news by any means, but I think it does say that, hey, you need to be more aware than ever that, you know, getting the HJ on board and doing a proper job is what you need to be doing. Okay, let's see. 2010 NFPA document. They have apparently taken, we were looking at some of the document there, they expanded the other transmission technologies section, which would have included like IP transmission. It was just a paragraph before, right? Now it's going to be about 8 pages. So clearly the NFPA is getting on board with this. All right, the other thing that's going on that Beth and I talked about on the fire side is really about a convergence of fire systems and mass notification systems, which is what the NFPA would like to see. And which is probably a natural fit. I mean, it's really an evacuation or it's a life safety system more than, you know, technically a security system, you know, these mass notifications are. One of the things Beth said is that they're seeing a tech trend of voice systems sales going up. You know, this used to be for high rises only, now it's going more down market, she says, with, you know, just facilities over 3 stories starting to use use voice. One of the thoughts on that is that the technology's been a little bit cheaper, and the other thought is that it's moving that way in terms of anticipation of mass notification systems going in, which are going to use voice systems as well, or audio recorded, rather than simple strobes and tones. And that's going to bring up, I think, is going to bring up the whole issue of intelligibility. Knowing where to put in a strobe, make it blink, put it so many feet away from the next one, so many per corridors, know where to put in sensors. That's great. You know, you can kind of map that out. It's almost a numbers game. Getting sound right and making sure that a message to your employees or to your, customers, if they're in your building, and making sure that they hear it and understand that that is a totally different ballpark. It's a totally different ballgame. We have got to think about how do we learn, how do we train all of our security systems integrators, fire systems integrators, on working with intelligibility. Now, one of the things that Beth and I were talking about, okay, you've got intelligibility on when the building's quiet. Like right now, I'm recording this here in my office, and it's reasonably quiet. Maybe the dog's walking around, the heater's running, and maybe the dryer's running in the background. Now, in a business, that might be the amount of noise that maybe is at night, right? Then you get the amount of noise where people are talking, lots of people around during the office during the day, or in the business. And so the noise level raises. Then you've got maybe an event, you've got more people than normal, and you've got to still make it intelligible to all of them. And then you've got levels at which you've got equipment running. Maybe you've got drill presses and other heavy machinery running and very, very noisy stuff. And then you've got to, keep it intelligible for that level of noise and in an environment as well. There's going to be some real issues here in intelligibility as we go forward, I think, in terms of mass notification systems. So, ISC East 2009, overall, let me just give you an impression. Show floor traffic on day one was fairly good. I'm hearing that day two is slower, but reasonable. So that's a very good thing as well. Now let's go ahead and turn to Steve Whalen, to talk about what is going on in with GVI in terms of this his acquisition by a private equity firm and taking the company private. So here's our interview from Wednesday, October 28th, live on the show floor at ISC East 2009 with Steve Whalen of Samsung GVI Security.
Tell me about the acquisition. You guys have now, you're going private.
We are.
Okay. What does that mean for the company?
Well, we're basically exchanging a group of public shareholders for a private equity fund. Mm-hmm. The name of the fund is called GenX 360. It's a fund that's about a year or two old. The first fund is $600 million, and they own four other companies now. We will be the fifth when the deal closes.
Okay.
And their idea is to acquire companies that are in growth industries, and through their resources, expertise, through their contacts, be able to help them grow.
Okay. Now, do they typically buy tech firms like yourself, or?
They usually buy some either technology or manufacturing-oriented company.
Okay.
Yeah. They're more. They're not. They don't have any investments, like say, in the service space.
Okay. Okay. In terms of growth, what are some of the initiatives that this might bring along for Samsung GVI?
Well, I mean, obviously, we see an opportunity to grow our core business by adding, more sales and marketing people and programs, which is something that, as a public company, we're more limited in what we could do because we're always, living quarter to quarter and having to report results that keep shareholders and the market happy. So here we'll be able to invest in programs on a more strategic level where the return may not be in the next 3 months. It might be in the next year. So that would be the key factor.
Does it mean anything in terms of change for your customers or not really at all?
Other than that, I think they're dealing with a stronger and deeper company. The same, management team will be in place. Joe Restivo and I have both agreed to sign four-year employment agreements. We have also purchased stock in the new company along with the GenX partners, so we're equity shareholders as well. So I think, I think what it shows for our customers is a wider, deeper organization with more stability in the future.
Okay. And this has to be approved by your shareholders?
Right. Well, the merger as of this interview, I don't know when you're going to print this or web it, but
okay.
As of today, the merger agreement has been announced, and then there'll be an offer to tender the shares, which will be coming out in the next few days, and then shareholders have 20 days needs to tender their shares.
Okay.
And once that's completed, a majority of the shares are tendered, then the deal finally concludes.
Does it affect any sort of the relationship with Samsung?
Not really, other than Samsung, you know, has been in the process all along the way. They've met the Gen X folks and vice versa as part of the due diligence process. And I think Samsung sees it as a positive because they knew we were, you know, we were spending time and resources being public, and those resources and time can now be spent more on selling more stuff for them and for us.
It sounds like it takes some of the load off your shoulder as well in terms of management.
Right. I've spent, you know, about half my time on the whole public side, so this allows me now to be able to spend more time with the sales teams, which is what I grew up on the sales side, as you know, and so I get to spend more time on that side and on the strategy with our team.
The stuff you love.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was fun being public. It was certainly a new experience for me, but in this marketplace, you know, it was definitely challenging when you're you know, a $50 million company and you're competing with the former blue chips for investors. It was a challenging time. So this is a good step for us right now and for our company and our customers. So we're when they approach us with it, we were quite interested in doing it.
Okay. All right. Anything else about that? The merge?
No, I think stand by. The more news as the process unfolds, it's all publicly disclosed, and you know, we expect it to complete sometime between you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Okay. Again, company's going private. I think, you know, probably a good thing for them. This has been a tough economy to be a publicly traded company. So it sounds like Steve is very excited to go private, be able to really focus on some of the stuff that they know they do best, and get back to business. So one final thing that I should have mentioned in my news earlier is that caught up with Dyster Electronics. I don't know how many of you know them, but Dyster's a pretty neat company. They build themselves as an RFID company. I really liked their key control system. You know, they've got some stuff for long-range read of RFID tags and close-range ones as well. I'm trying to do more with RFID beyond just simply being badges at doors. Trying to do, they're looking at things like linen tags so they could track materials in hotels. I mean, it's all about asset tracking, really pushing the technology in some neat areas. One of the things I liked a lot for our industry, purely for security, was a new key control system that has specific RFID tags attached to the key. The whole system is managed from a little control pad next to a key locker. And you badge in to open up the key locker, maybe enter a PIN, tell which key you want by pressing in the number, you get it. It releases it automatically for you, so you can't grab it until you enter that info. And then it comes back, and it'll even recognize, when you put it back, whether it's in the same slot that it used to be. It'll learn its new slot, so that when you hit key one, it used to be in spot number one. Now maybe somebody put it back in spot number 12. Well, it relearns, of course, through the RFID. It learns, hey, I'm in spot 12 now, so when somebody enters key one, let me light up a light that says grab it from key 12. Really cool stuff going on there. Definitely check out Dyster if you're looking for a pretty innovative key control system. This is Leon Klimper is heading up that company right now in the U.S. and really doing some I think gonna try to raise their awareness in the U.S. And this, by the way, this product is particularly designed for companies that have done an electronic access control system with cards across the facility. They don't quite have the budget to do it at X number of doors. They need to keep those doors on keys for cost. They can add in a pretty slick key control system and put more security at those doors and manage those keys better than you could have before. Anyway, that's it for my ISC East 2009 podcast. If you've got any thoughts, please add them to the comments or email us at podcast@securityinfowatch.com or editor@securityinfowatch.com. And as always, thanks for supporting securityinfowatch.com, and we're happy to cover this industry for you.